And this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We were hoping to present you with a conversation about measles outbreak in Chicago for the rest of our show today. Unfortunately, we did have a guest cancellation at the last minute. So instead, we're going to revisit my conversation with the writer Brant McDuff, author of a book called The Shotgun Conservationists, Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting. McDuff writes, "To those both curious and ambivalent about hunting, if you compost, drive a hybrid or electric car, enjoy being outdoors, get your groceries from a farmer's market, pride yourself on buying regeneratively raised 100% grass-fed beef or bison and sustainably sourced wild-caught Alaskan seafood, if you want to be more self-sufficient and love animals, then you're in the right place. You are primed to become a hunter or hunting advocate." Here to make that case in person is Brant McDuff. Brant, happy publication day. Welcome to the 21st show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. Yeah, I'm excited about the book coming out today. It's exciting.
Yeah. Brant, I think it might be useful for our listeners if we start with your bona fides as somebody who really, truly hated hunting at one point in your life. And I don't know if you want to start with archery at summer camp or something else, but can you make that case?
Absolutely. Yeah, I there was a part of me that wanted to include some segments from my childhood journals because they are filled with the crazy sort of rants you might see on social media about how much I hated hunters. And I just couldn't understand anyone wanting to go out into the woods to kill an animal on purpose. It just baffled me to my core. The summer camp story is, my convictions were so strong that at summer camp, I made the camp counselors turn the archery target around from the silhouette of a deer to just a plain bullseye target. They had to stop the whole archery practice to go do it for me. So such were my convictions. So I've always been an animal nut, but when you start being an animal nut as a kid, your priorities are generally, well, how good is a bear's sense of smell? You're interested in animal factoids. And as I continued to learn about animals as I got older, I wanted to study the greater systems needed to keep them around on this planet for future generations. So you end up shifting from animal fun facts to wildlife economics. And that is eventually what brought me to what made me become a hunter and a hunting advocate.
Yeah. And just there was something I want to stay on this idea of your sort of hatred of hunting or distaste for it at the very least, because something you wrote really sort of resonated with me, which is this idea of dividing hunters into two camps, right? The sort of the trophy hunters and the sportsmen, although maybe a little bloodlusty. Can you talk about that?
Sure. I think that's still the way most people feel today is some people will, if you're a non-hunter, you give a little bit of a free pass to those who you hear about. Okay, well, I know this guy and he goes deer hunting every year, but he eats the deer. And so I kind of get that, whatever, but I can't stand those trophy hunters. And then, and I feel like a lot of people fall into that camp of separating hunters into those two groups. And even within the hunting community, you'll find people with the same sentiments. And so I wanted to explore those two groups and see what the realities were there. And if there was something to quote unquote trophy hunting that maybe I was also missing, considering I had missed so much about every other aspect of hunting. And that brought me further and further down the wildlife economics rabbit hole and seeing what the pros and cons and benefits of every aspect of the hunting lifestyle I just didn't know about and ended up learning so much about.
Yeah, absolutely. And your journey takes you into a butcher shop as well as a taxidermy adventures. Let's start on the food side of things, though, because you write, just because you didn't shoot the rotisserie chicken at the grocery store, you're not any less culpable for its death. Talk about that hypocrisy of being a meat eater who hates hunting.
Yeah, that was me for a long time. I ate meat. I didn't want to give it up. I didn't think I could give it up. I mean, I craved it on a gut level that was different than just enjoying birthday cake. I really wanted to eat it on a very deep level. So I felt bad about that because, you know, as you get older, you realize, oh, right, the animals that I love so much, the meat comes from them. And so as I got older and older, I made it my mission to get to source my meat from more and more environmentally friendly sources as much as I could. And that for most of us, that looks like the first step, which is, okay, you buy the meat that sort of has the happy stickers on it, like it came from such and such local farm, or no, yeah,
free range chickens,
no,
right?
Yeah. That free range. Yeah. Oh, don't get me started on chicken eggs. There's 1,000 different labels and you have to know what each and every single one of them means. And they all mean a little bit different thing, even though the names are very similar. Oh, it's really difficult to keep up with all the labels, but that's kind of where you start. And then maybe you just get your meat from the farmer's market, or you're buying it more from the farmer's market and you're talking to the farmers and you know where it comes from and you feel good about the local farm. And that's when I started working at the butcher shop. I said, okay, well, now I really want to have a hand in where my meat is coming from. I want to know where the farms were, and I want to see if I can take a half pig off a truck on my back and put it on the cutting table and disassemble it and really feel like I had a hand in making this happen, feel the responsibility. And that was very helpful. But again, it's not something everybody can do. And so I wanted to take advantage of that as a learning opportunity. And it really was, but I felt like there was more I could be doing. So what was the next thing I could do? What was even better than that? And it really was getting meat right out of the woods. And if you think about eating meat and paying for meat, and this goes for all food, really, paying for your food, where does that money go? What are you supporting with your dollar? You know, we always talk about voting with your dollar. So what am I supporting with my dollar? And I liked supporting the local ranches that we worked with at the butcher shop where I was working. But I was like, but I'm still supporting a farm. I'm still supporting a ranch or what have you. So how can I support nature? And it dawned on me, this thing that everyone else who's a hunter already knows, that if you are buying a hunting license, if you are buying hunting equipment, then you are putting money into the wildlife conservation system in America. So that's where your money goes. And I might be in the woods trying to shoot a deer over and over and over again, but maybe it only happens once, or maybe it doesn't happen at all that season. But I'm still supporting wild lands with my dollar. And so that's what became most important for me. And I had to sort of put the fact that I would be responsible for killing the deer myself, I had to kind of put that aside, because I was so concerned about the systems I was supporting, and I wanted to support wild systems, not agricultural ones.
All right, we need to take a break on our program. For the rest of the show today, we're listening back to a conversation I had with the writer Brant McDuff. I spoke with him last year when he had just put out a book called The Shotgun Conservationists, Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting. We are not taking calls for this part of the show, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. I should also mention we had scheduled previously a conversation about a measles outbreak in Chicago for the rest of the show today, but we are putting that on hold as we had a guest who could not join us at the start of the segment. So that will hopefully be brought to you soon. More to come here on the 21st Show with Brant McDuff after a short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the rest of the program today, we're listening back to my conversation from last April with Brant McDuff. He had just come out with a book called The Shotgun Conservationist, Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting. In it, he describes his journey from being a young person who hated the idea of hunting and thought it was cruel and awful to somebody who is now an advocate for hunting. We are not taking calls live as this part of the show is on tape, but we do always appreciate hearing from you. So send us an email, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, back to my conversation with Brant McDuff. So Brant, you write about your sort of journey to becoming a hunter. Your training was actually in Queens, New York. You took some classes there. What was it like to learn hunting in New York City?
So the classes I took in Queens were for my hunter education. Now, if you want to buy a hunting license anywhere in America, you have to pass hunter ed first. You can take the classes online. Most of them still require an in-person visit. These classes used to have more hunting education in terms of how to hunt included with them, but now the majority of the class is just focused on the safety and law that relate to hunting. So you get your license only after you have completed the courses and passed a test, and then you can buy your hunting license. Now, hunting license is also state by state. So I live in New York. I buy my New York state hunter's license, but if I want to go hunting in Montana, I have to buy a license separately for the state of Montana. It was pretty wild taking the classes in Queens. It does feel weird to take them anywhere in New York City, but there were actually a couple different courses offered, and I couldn't even go to the one in Brooklyn where I live because it had already sold out. The course in Queens was also full, and kind of like a microcosm of New York City itself, the class was full of a demographic range of people I really wasn't expecting. So it was full, there were younger people, older people, and everyone was there completing their courses to get their license. And now, after being a hunter for 6-ish years, I've definitely made a lot of New York City hunter friends. And so it's not as uncommon as you might think. And there is a growing number of people interested in becoming hunters, especially in very urban areas.
Yeah. And if listeners, if you're getting the impression the book is all sort of blood and butchery, there's some, it can be pretty funny. I enjoyed your description of your instructors with their sort of Long Island coffee, New York accents, and,
yeah.
Insulting Jersey at least once every lesson.
It's a cast of characters for sure. The whole book is kooky stories, and it's a serious subject that I handle pretty lightly, to say the least. I think it's full of like Simpsons references, and I think I quote Mufasa from The Lion King. It's unhinged and silly and fun about a serious subject.
Yeah. Well, on that serious subject, let's talk about your first deer hunt, first successful deer hunt. What's going through your mind as you're actually carrying out this thing that you'd thought about for so long?
So I think the part of it is, if it hasn't happened yet, I just kind of felt like it wasn't going to happen. I would keep going because hunting it's very difficult. I think people think it's easy. It is not easy at all. And so however many unsuccessful hunts I had had prior, I think it was like 8 or so, I kept, as I was in this tree stand and seeing deer come towards me, I was still kind of unsure it was going to happen at all, but I could feel my heart pounding in my chest. And as the deer got closer and closer and closer, I kept trying to give myself an out, like, well, I don't really like the quartering angle he's got. That doesn't look like a safe shot to me, so I'm not going to take that shot. And then he kept getting closer and closer. And then he gave me this big broadside shot and he was right next to me. And I just squeezed the trigger of my crossbow so slowly and it just happened. I think I had been preparing myself for so long that to a certain extent I was on not autopilot, but I was so zoned in that I just kind of did what I had been training myself to do. And as many different jobs and experiences in the outdoors that I have had, I truly have never felt a connection to nature the way I do when I am hunting. It doesn't matter if I see an animal or not, I could just be sitting in the woods, but your connection to nature is different when you are hunting than when you are hiking, let's say, because you are connecting to it in this, it sounds cheesy to say, but in this really sort of primitive, primordial way that I didn't think I had in me, I wasn't expecting to feel, but I did. And that was shocking to me. I wasn't seeking out that experience. You hear about sort of the sort of Ernest Hemingway, sort of the way people write about hunting and the connection to the land and the animals. And you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's true. There's a reason they write about it. And I felt it and I couldn't deny it.
I'm guessing there are people listening to this who hear you say that and think, connection to nature, you're destroying nature. What do you say to that?
Mm-hmm. So I realized that all the other activities, all the other outdoor recreation activities that I had undertaken in the past, that was me just sort of moving through nature. I was a whitewater rafting guide for a while. And
you worked at REI and another Eastern Mountain Sports.
I worked at REI and Eastern Mountain Sports. Yep. And I used to outfit people for long trips. And I felt that I was connected to nature, but I just didn't realize at the time how different it was. When you're hunting, you really must understand the outdoors on a different level, because you're not just passing through it, you are interacting with it. And if you do want to be a successful hunter, then you have to understand every single little signal that nature is communicating to you. And it requires a much deeper investment into ecology than any other outdoor recreational activity does. And when I think about terms that other outdoor rec uses, they'll say a lot of things like non-consumptive. So with hunting, you think of hunting as a consumptive activity. I am taking something from nature. I might take a deer out of the woods or a fish out of the stream. But that ultimately is beneficial and at the very least sustainable and not harmful to nature. Whereas some stuff like skiing, mountain biking, that can truly be the more destructive activity for the outdoors, because you're relying on changing habitat for those activities. And it can really bother the way animals move through spaces or the way they interact with their winter range, which is so important for their winter survival. So you think of a hunter going into the forest and taking out a deer, but the hunter does not change their habitat. In fact, the hunter wants nothing more than their habitat to remain unchanged. And they work very hard for that.
Let's go to the phones. We have about 5 minutes left in our program today. And Bill is calling on line 4 from Springfield. Bill, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. I have two questions, and maybe the first one you guys just now discussed. But what are the specific benefits which hunting does provide for wildlife? But also I would like to know, what are some non-hunting ways that could conceivably provide the same benefits to wildlife?
All right. Thank you for that, Bill.
Yeah. So specifically, when we talk about the wildlife economy, it's what is nature getting, what is nature and wildlife getting back from this or that activity? When it comes to hunting, first of all, just that there's the money. So right off the bat, there is money. Every time you buy a hunting license or you buy a specialty tag that allows you to hunt a particular species, or a tag that is required, like in order to hunt waterfowl, you have to get a migratory bird stamp, and those are about $25 at the moment. So there's just money that you have to spend to be a hunter in America. And that money goes directly to U.S. Fish and Wildlife conservation programming. There's another part of this called, that are excise taxes. So built right into the cost of hunting equipment is an 11% excise tax that every time you go and you buy hunting or fishing equipment, a portion of that cost goes back to U.S. Fish and Wildlife for conservation programming. Now, that doesn't happen with other outdoor rec activities or equipment. So if I go skiing and I buy a bunch of skiing equipment, there's no excise tax in any of that equipment that goes back to Mother Nature. There's no part of my ski lift pass that goes to protecting elk and mule deer so that their winter range can be protected from further development or anything like that. So these laws were passed in the early 1930s after wildlife took a very serious hit from market hunting practices. And they said, you know, if people are going to source from the wild, we have to make sure that there's money going back into it. And so that happens with hunting, but it doesn't happen with other outdoor rec activities. And then there's also just that connection to nature. And part of that, aside from just people feeling good when they spend time in the woods, is if you're an avid turkey hunter, and mm-hmm. you know that the turkey population isn't doing well in your area, you are probably the one who is giving the information to U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because you can tell, hey, I'm not seeing the turkey in greater numbers. I think we had too much flooding. There also seems to be an increase in small predator populations due to a lack of trapping in this area and an overpopulation of this or that in this area. So because you're so connected to the woods and what they are telling you, you're able to communicate that to U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And that's actually where a lot of government agencies get their information on migration and population info. So it really is kind of a closed circle.
Sure. Well, we are pretty much out of time for this conversation. I want to thank Bill for calling in. We also did get a call from Bobby. She didn't want to go on air. Also in Springfield, said she supports hunting because of how she was raised and her family, with a respectful way of doing it as food and as a necessity. She also talked about the inhumane way of transporting animals, especially pigs, and how they, this particular batch she saw, I think, seemed to be dying of heat exhaustion. So if you want to learn more about this, if you want to engage with Brant McDuff's arguments, the book is The Shotgun Conservationist, Why Environmentalists Should Love Hunting. Brant, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your book with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow, it's Election Day, finally, for the Illinois primaries, although voting has been going on for more than a month. We'll be laying out the stakes of the race, opening the phones up to voters, and taking last-minute questions with an official from the Illinois State Board of Elections. Plus, several years ago, Illinois made major changes to the way it spends money on schools. A new report looks at how that's gone. We will be talking about that all tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening, and we will talk with you again tomorrow.